All right, so we're holding on Hey Amud Aleph, two lines from the end of the narrow lines, so about seven or eight lines from the bottom of the Amud. Still discussing the issue of Rabba and Rabba's disagreement about why, when you bring a get from Medina Sayyam, or from one country to another within the Medina Sayyam, etc., that you have to say b'fana nechtem, that it was written and signed in my presence. So far, what we got to is that, so we started by saying that Rabba said the reason is because in Chutz Lartis, they're not familiar with Lashma, therefore the get may not have been written or signed, as the case may be, Lashma. And Rabba had said because you won't find Edim to certify the signatures because people don't travel back and forth enough. After a lot of give and take, we got to the conclusion yesterday that there came a point, first of all, that Rabba does agree with Rava's consideration. So therefore, according to Rabba, you have two considerations why you need to find an Echtem, find an Echtem. According to Rabba, you only have the one, because he believes that everywhere they know about Lishma.
And Rabba agrees with Rabba,
but the reverse is not true.
Right.
Number two, we also said, even according to Rabba, there came a point when Lomdu, there came a point when the Bnei Chutzlaret, when the Bnei Medina Sayyam, learned the concept of Lishma. And then, once we're at that point, in principle, it shouldn't be necessary to say b'fana nechtem anymore. We said, Shema Yachza, Dovah L'Kukula, you never know, it might go back to the old bad way, where they don't know, and therefore we're going to continue, therefore we're going to keep the Takana in place.
Let me ask you a question. We don't need to say that they could forget, and then we keep the Takana in place. How can we change the Takana Sochani Bichot in the first place?
Because it depends how the Takana was made. If the Takana was made, as long as certain conditions apply, if according to Rabba, the reason why it was made is because Bnei Chutzlaret don't know, then once they know, then the Takana automatically falls away.
We need a Beis Din in
Yerushalayim. No, if you don't need it in Yerushalayim necessarily, but yes, if the original Chachamim had just made the Gzeira without a reason, then yes, you couldn't be Mavakabot unless you're greater B'chachm over Minyan. Yeah. But if they said, the reason we're making this Gzeira is because Bnei Chutzlaret do not know Lishma,
yeah,
then eventually, when Bnei Chutzlaret learn Lishma, then automatically it falls away.
We can make that determination.
Yeah, the Chachamim of that time can make
that time.
Of the time when they learn. Can make that. Yeah. So we said at the beginning, the older saying is Lufan and Nichtav, Lufan and Nechtem. It was written in my presence, and it was signed in my presence. How that tells us that Lishma, so we said originally at the very beginning of the Sugya, that Rashi says that they actually have to ask them as well, is it Lishma, etc. And Tosfos says we don't have to ask them if they're able to declare b'fana nechtem, automatically then we know from that it means that everything was done on the up and up.
And that's something is the halacha, right?
Well,
it's like this is the halacha.
I don't know necessarily. I mean, the halacha is they have to say b'fana nechtem. We're not, whether they have to ask them all those details. I think you're right. The halacha is like Tosfos. They don't necessarily have to cross-examine them about the rest of the details. But okay, yeah. Okay. So, Toshma, maybe get Medina Sayyam. We learn a braisa that if somebody brings a get from Medina Sayyam, but not Snevan, and he gives it to the woman, the loyam Allah b'fana nechtem, and he did not make this declaration. Then what happens is, im niskayim b'choismo kosher, if then you're able to validate the signatures of the Edim themselves come, or you have other people who know their signatures, etc., kosher, they are possible. And if not, the get will be possible. And the Braisa continues, Havi, so you see from that, so the whole reason for making the Shliach say b'fana nechtem is not to be machmir, but rather to be makel. That we're not saying that even if the get even if the Edim's signatures have already been validated, we're still going to require b'fana nechtem. No, it's b'fana nechtem avoids having to do that in the first place. Replaces that, yeah. So the Rava Michal, the Rava Kasha. So according to Rava, that fits very well. And he says the whole problem was only Kiyum. So if, in other words, the Braisa itself is implying, if you have Kiyum, you don't need b'fana nechtem. The Kiyum is, yes. And just the Rava Kasha. According to Rava, that there's a problem with the Shema, then yeah. And again, the answer the Gemara tries, okay, but after they learned about the Shema, then you're right. Then Rabba would agree with Rabba that all you have is the issue of Eidei Mitzvah Mekayimah. The question is, but didn't you say earlier in the Sugya that you still are worried that it may go back to the way it was originally? Why do we say then? What do we mean? No. You were asking how can we cancel the Gzeira. The real answer is ultimately we did not cancel the Gzeira. We said in principle the Gzeira could be canceled at that point, but we didn't. So the Gzeira, the Takana, is still in effect. But according to this now, we're saying that In a circumstance like this, all you need to do is validate the signatures. Why? What are you doing about the Lishma problem? What are you doing about Shema Yachsa Ador L'Chokolai? Why shouldn't we say the get is possible, make him go back and get another get? The answer is Kshinisis. Yes, but you know what we're talking about already? We're talking about where the woman already remarried. She got the get. She figured, okay, everything is good, and she went and remarried. Now, afterwards, it was pointed out, you know what, he didn't say b'fana nechta, b'fana nechta. We're not going to force her to get divorced from her second husband because of this takana of b'fana nechta, b'fana nechta.
If she has not remarried, we would.
Yeah, so then the question is, if that's the case, so what do you mean? What is the Braisa saying that the purpose of, the Braisa is saying that in general we see from that b'fana nechtam is not meant as a chumra, but rather as a kula? What do you mean? The reason for the kula is mishum the nisitu. It's only because she got married. It's not that we allow kiyum shtaris to stand in place of b'fana nechtam. Only in this specific case we're not going to be in. The answer is hakakama. That's what, in other words, what the braisa means is as follows: v'chi tema lahachmer leah. So you should think maybe in this case, let's be machmer on her, the lapka, and in the case where he does not say b'fana nechtam, and we don't yet have edim validating it, then maybe, well, no, of course you shouldn't get married until b'fana nechtam is said. But we're talking about if she's already married, you would think maybe even so be machmer on her, the latka, and make her have to leave her second husband, make her have to divorce her second husband, and get a new get, and then on that, right? So saying, Havi, no, you have to realize, loy hutzu halom b'fana nechtam, lahachmer leah ela lahachmer leah. That it's meant to be makel. The purpose of b'fana nechtam is l'chila to make it easier for her that she shouldn't need edim to validate the get. But if already she went and got married, we're not going to say on the grounds of that she didn't say b'fana nechtam, either they didn't say b'fana nechtam, force her to get divorced. No, we won't say that. We'll say in that case, you know what? You want to go the harder way? You want to have edim validated? Fine, go ahead and do that.
But their
vlad is on mamzer. No, so that's what we're saying. She's still allowed to stay married to her husband, and the vlad is certainly not mamzer yet. Well, that's what the Gemara is going to say now. Actually, let's finish the Gemara, and then we'll, yeah. Time of my, because what's the whole reason why we require, according to Rava, b'fana nechtam, Dilma Ofi Baal Ma'ar Apostle, because, or even according to Rava, actually, according to Rava, the problem is Lashma. The problem really is because the husband, as long as we don't have anybody objecting, we have no reason, okay, some but they didn't in the Chassodis do know Lashma, some of them don't, so fine, we're not going to assume that he didn't know. But the problem is, Dilma Ofi Baal Ma'ar Apostle, the husband may come and complain, it's an invalid get, and make it possible. Well, Hashtabal come out. In this case, we're talking about the husband had not come with any complaint. So why should we come and complain on his behalf? In other words, yes, we don't want her to marry Lachila with such a get, but we're not going to be machmer on her so much to say if she already married without it, we're going to say because there was no b'fana nechtam, and because the husband is able at this point to object, therefore we're going to pass her a second marriage.
Able. We're assuming that he knows.
That's the thing. In other words, he's able to because since we didn't say b'fana nechtam, then the husband still has the capability of coming and complaining should he so desire to. But as long as he doesn't, we're not going to be machmer on her to the extent of saying that she should have to divorce her second husband.
We don't make it mandatory to inform the husband of her remarriage.
Doesn't say that we do. Now, so Tosfos points out, if there's no b'fana nechtam, and there's no validation of the signatures, then yes, we are going to require her to get divorced, and then we're going to say havlat mamzer, because that's, yeah.
Obviously.
Well, it's not so obvious. Maybe not. Still, the husband is not objecting. Why should we say, fine, maybe we'll say she has to get divorced. Why should we say havlat mamzer? No, the reason is because we're going to get to what Rav Meir says, that any time you mashanim mafesh tava chacham, any time you change the wording that the chachamim told you to say, havlat mamzer, with the exception of the three gittin that we talked about. We haven't said that yet. I think I was going to say it soon, but that's what I'm saying. Okay. So now, all this time we've been talking this machlokas of Rabba and Rava. So now the Gemara points out the plukta of Rav Yochanan and Rav Shimon Levi. Actually, this is the same machlokas as Rav Yochanan and Rav Shimon Levi. Namely, chad amal afishen b'ki in l'shma, v'chad amal afishen edim b'tzoyim l'kaimer. Exactly the same thing. One of them says Rava's reason. One of them says Rava's reason. Okay, the Gemara doesn't have a problem with the fact that they're repeating the same machlokas, because not necessarily do all the Amorayim know of each other's machlokas. And Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shob and Levi are in Eretz Yisrael, Rabba and Rava are in Vavel, not necessarily do they know the same machlokas took place there. Okay, among Rabba and Rava, we know who said which. Among Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shob, we don't. which one said which opinion? Tishtayim. We can prove you're Rabbi Shimon Levi who do Amal Pishen Bikiyim Lishma. That is Rabbi Shimon Levi who holds the one that the reason is because of the Lishma problem. Rabbi Shimon Levi was Neret Yisrael. So we can prove from the following story that he's the one who said that the issue is the Lishma issue, the same as Rabba. Rabbi Shimon Ba'aba Aisi Gitzel Kamei Rabbi Shimon Levi, because one time Rabbi Shimon Ba'aba brought a get as a shliach to Rabbi Shimon Levi, and he asked, do I have to make that declaration or not? Amalei and Rabbi Shimon Levi tells him, no, you don't need it. Because this whole din was only said in the earlier generation where they did not know the concept of Lishma, but in the later generations, in our time, where they do know about Lishma, then we don't need it. Okay, the Gemara says, that's what he said. So therefore, you should be able to prove from that he holds the problem is Lishma. Once that problem has gone away, then that's it. No need.
Did he express his opinion?
However, the Gemara asks, Tisbara, how could you think that? Lahad Rabba Islay de Rabba. Didn't we say before that Rabba agrees with Rabba's reason? We should assume then that Rabbi Shimon Levi is also aware of the reason of Fishay Nehdi Mitzuyim Makaimot, and that should be a reason to keep the Takana in place as well. We said that they might go back to their old Amaratisha ways and not know about Lishma. How can Rabbi Shimon Levi say as a blanket statement that Takana doesn't exist anymore? Ella, no. So we have to say there's a different reason why Rabbi Shimon Levi said to him, you don't have to say b'fanenechta. Rabbi Shimon Ba'aba ina shachrina hava ba'adeh. There was actually somebody else there together with Rabbi Shimon Ba'aba. So there's really two, and we established before that if two shluchim bring the get, they do not need to say b'fanenechtem, because we said before, they themselves are able to certify the signatures, they themselves would be able to claim by migui, basically, that she was divorced in our presence, and that would be all their, they'd be the aid and misira themselves, and that's all the evidence we need, so therefore they don't need to make the declaration.
And only then.
I behold like Choshev Leis, so then why doesn't the story mention him? Because of Reb Shimon's honor, this other person was a much lesser personage than him. It wouldn't have been derech eretzik, as if to say, like, he and this other guy are on an equal level. But really, that's how it was. There was actually somebody else there. And therefore, so when Reb Shimon Levi said to him, so in other words, what we have to say then is that all Reb Shimon Levi told him is loy tzrichas, you don't need. When we said the reason Dodas Hashanim versus Dodas Achronim, that's the Gemara's editorializing on it. That, why loy tzrichas? L'chora, because of that. But now we're saying that's not why he told them Lo Tzrichas. Lo Tzrichas because you're two people, and then two people don't need to declare it.
So that's average.
Tosfos actually says that the Gemara is not really undoing. Tosfos brings a slightly different gears over here. That the Gemara is not really undoing what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said. We still are sticking with the idea that he's saying that the reason is because of Lishma. But once you have two people, then we're not worried about Lishma anymore. Because again, like we said on Amud Aleph yesterday, that two people by themselves, even according to Rabba, are enough to be able to say that it's Lishma because by a migui, because they could have said it was done in our presence, because they could have said she was divorced in our presence, not just that the get was written in our presence. So now they had a discussion of Amaroim. B'fnei kama noisnilo. In front of how many people, when this shliach comes and says b'fanenechta, how many other people does he have to give it to her in the presence of? Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Chanina argue about that. Chadam b'fnei shnayim, chadam b'fnei shloisha. One says it has to be done in the presence of two people. One says it has to be done in the presence of three people. Okay, again, which one says what? We can prove that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that it has to be in front of two. Why? Because one time Rabban Baruch Chista brought a get to Rabbi Yochanan. Go give it to her in the presence of two and tell her and then say b'fanenechtem. Kisayim. Okay, good. That proves it. So Rabbi Yochanan holds that it only has to be done in front of two. Now, why only two? Why should we say two? Why should we say three? Lema b'haka mifrigi. Should we say then that the underlying chloikus is as follows? Basically, what we're going to figure is like this. Well, okay, so let's see. Demand amr v'fnei shnayim, the one who says it's enough, name Rabbi Yochanan, and he said now, he says it's in front of two, kasavol afishen b'kiyim l'shma, because then he would hold that the problem is l'shma. So all you need then is two edim, and that's enough for us to say that it's considered that now they can certify in front of those two edim that it was done l'shma. The one who says, Rav Chanina, who says you need three, hold that it's a matter of you don't have paid him to validate it. And then in order validating shtaros, as we learned in Ksubas several months ago, always requires a base din of three. So therefore, if you're saying that the issue is the validation of the signatures, then you always need a base din of three. And that would be why. Again, ask the Tizbara, how can you think that? First of all, we just said before in the previous machlokas, we established that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one who holds the problem is lishma. That's what makes Rashi and Tosfos say. By the way, the Gemara did not go back on its assumption before that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that the problem is lishma, just because of the question of that Rabba agrees with Rabba. The Gemara just said that there were two people over there, but nevertheless, the Gemara still is operating under the assumption that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one who said the problem is lishma. Which would mean, then, that Rabbi Yochanan has to be the one who says that the problem is ein eidim mitzvah in l'kaim, right? Which would mean that you need three, because you need three for kiyum shtaros. How can you say you can do it in front of two? How can all of a sudden Rabbi Yochanan turn around here and say that two people are enough when you always need three to validate signatures? Three is a base in front of whom the signatures are validated, that is. Kiyum shtaros, yeah. You need two Adim to testify to the validity of the signatures, and it has to be done in the presence of a base din of three. So what here we're saying, fine, we accept the one shliach's word because mitshumiguna, whatever, as we said at the beginning, we still need a base din of three. How can he say two? To receive that claim, yeah, how can he say two? But Rabba is the Rabba, and again, we've been saying for the last Amud, the last Daf, that Rabba holds, that Rabba agrees with Rabba. Which means, therefore, that even if you say the problem is lishma, you still need eidim mitzvah. You still need the problem of eidim mitzvah in the time, right? So both Rabbi Yechon, if it was that, then both Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Chanina should both be saying you need three. No, ela to kula amah, but in an eidim mitzvah in the time. No, fine. We'll say that both Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Chanina know that the problem is if you don't have eidim to validate it. So the machlokas is over here: is the shliach able to become an aid? And in turn, is an aid able to become a dayan? The question of whether a shliach can become an aid comes up in kedushin. For example, if a person sends a shliach to be makadish a woman for him, can that shliach count as one of the two aidim in front of whom the kedushin is done? Or do we say maybe not, because he's negev a dover? He's the one who's making the kedushin happen by giving her the object and saying hariat mekudeshes
l'ploini. I understand a shliach becoming an aid, but how can an aid be a dayan?
So, well, as we'll talk about, actually, the Gemara mentions in a number of places that the Gemara is actually going to mention a few lines that in things that are bonum, there's no question an aid can become a dayan. In things that are raisa, it's questionable. Doesn't matter, but that's the issue. Maybe in things that are raisa, there are many cases where put it this way: when it comes to dinin nefashis, there's no question that ain't nas a dayan. But when it comes to dinin mominus and when it comes to other kinds of things, there's actually machlokas in a number of places in chat whether a person can testify and then sit down as one of the dayanim. Well, the Gemara mentions in Rosh Hashanah another case where we say that definitely ein eid nasa dayan is in the case of Kiddush HaChodesh. Namely, therefore, we have a case over there. We have not just because of Zeraisa. The Gemara brings a limud for it, but from a pasuk. Because even if you say by dinim mominus it's allowed, but Kiddush HaChodesh is an exception. So therefore, you have the Mishnah gives a case over there. If only three members of the Sanhedrin see the new moon, then two of them become eidim. They seat the third one as a dayan, and they take two of their colleagues who have not seen the moon and sit them down as two other dayanim over there. And the two who saw testify in front of the other one who saw, as well as the other two with him,
so
and they can, and yeah,
and three come to the dayan.
The three are considered dayanim, yeah.
And so two are eidim and one.
So the point is, in other words, we don't say that the two can testify in front of their one colleague, and then they'll sit down and join the bench and decide Mekudesh HaChodesh. They can't do that because ain't eid nasa dayan in that case. But in cases of dinim mominus, there is an opinion that eid nasa dayan. So over here, then.
That's the halacha.
Well, no. Well, in Derabbanan, yes. In Derabbanan, I'm not sure. But
mominus is where Derabbanan or
dinim mominus are there. Many of them are Derabbanan.
Is it supposed to be
Fair enough, but I don't think that's not the reason why. I don't think that's the reason the Gemara says there why you need not to die. No, the Gemara over there learned it from a pasuk. I don't remember now what. Anyway. If we so here we have the question: can the shliach become an aid, and can the aid become a dayan? We established to the Yechanan, who said it's enough to do it in front of two kasava shliach nasa aid, the aid nasa dayan. So he holds the shliach is able to become an aid, the aid in turn can become a dayan. So therefore, he is giving aiders that he's coming and saying b'fana nechta b'fana nechta, which amounts to aiders. Then it amounts to aiders that it was from the shema and that I'm certifying the signatures, etc. Even though again you say normally you need two people to certify signatures, but here mishum iguna or meikel, and then in turn he joins together with the other two, and the three of them together accept that kiyum and stamp on the shtar that now the signatures have been valid.
The reason of being meikel for the iguna.
No, not necessarily. Wait, just we're saying that according to this opinion, aid nasa dayan in things other than dinim amanis, in other than dinim afrashes. I mean, umanda amufne gimel. Where's the opinion of Chanina who says you need three? Because of a shliach nasa aid, the aid nasa dayan. Fine, the shliach can be an aid. I have no problem with that. But the aid cannot in turn become a dayan. So therefore, you need three other people besides him. Okay, the question is why? But Hakaimel under Rabbanon, the aid nasa dayan. We know when it comes to things that are bonon, that definitely an aid can become a dayan. We actually... No, dinim amanos are not dirabonon, but kiyum shtaris is dirabonon. The whole concept of kiyum shtaris... Some folks can talk about the details, that there's a difference whether there was an error or not. If there was already an error, if there was already an objection, these signatures are forged or what have you, then kiyum shtaris may be daraisa. But if there's no objection yet, which is what we're dealing with over here, the get was just brought, nobody raised any objection, that you should have to do kiyum shtaris. In that case, it's only did up on it. But it hasn't happened yet. At the time, when the get is being delivered, there's no objection at that time. No, but it's not a matter of in case. Right now, there's no error. Therefore, right now, the kiyum that we're doing ahead of time, as soon as the get is brought, is only did up on it. And when it comes to things that are bonum, definitely aid not to dying. So you can't say that's the Macholikus. Elohacha b'hokam with me. You say, no, rather the Macholikus is as follows. D'mar sabakim de ishik sheir elohav is a get. Since one opinion, Rav Chanina takes the view, since a woman is also kosher as a shliach to bring a get, so what's going to happen? Zimnin l'maisi lo itza, so it may happen to have a woman brings a get, the samchi alone, and then they're going to rely on her. They're not going to consider, you know what, wait a minute, a woman can't sit on a beis din. They're not going to realize, you know what, hey, wait a minute, we really need a beis din of three, and she can't count as one of them, therefore we need to assemble three people together. They're not going to realize that. They may just have two people, and two people are not enough for a beis din to certify documents, to be mekayim shtaris. Therefore we need three lechatchila, because they may make that mistake. The Idach, whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say, Isha Meida Yadi, everybody knows a woman can't sit on a beis din. But like Samchel, they're going to know very well that if a woman is a shliach, they're going to know they can't expect to have her join the beis din. And therefore, they're going to know, in a case, when a woman brings a get, then they'll know they have to have three. We're not going to make that you always have to have three in case a woman comes as a shliach for a get. Practically speaking, most of the time they'll have two. Most of the time the shliach will be a man, and they can have two, because that man, the aide, can become one of the dayanim. But if a woman brings a get, then yes, then they're going to have a panel of three. And then they're going to have three men.
They're
both agreeing. In a case like that, then everybody agrees they have to have three. But in a normal case, in a usual case, where it's a man bring the shliach, then one says two and one says three, yeah. Tosfos points out, I mean, you could also have, by the same token, we could have pointed out there could be another case also. What if a relative brings a get? A relative is also possible to sit on a beis din. So the same idea. Then you can't have him join the panel.
He can be an
aide. He can be a shliach in this case, and he can be a shliach. And because again, the shumi guna will allow him to be an aide as well. But still, we're going to have a beis din listening to the testimony and then validating the signatures. He can't be part of that beis din. We learn a braisa in accordance with Rabbi Yechanan. Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yechanan. We learn a braisa like what Rabbi Yechanan says. How maybe get from Medina Siyam and Nasne Lov? Like Amalov Bufan and Nechtam Bufan and Nechtam. Somebody brings a get from Medina Siyam and gave it to her. Did not say Bufan and Nechtam Bufan and Nechtam. Yoytzi Vav Lab Mamzer. Divir the mayor. So the mayor says the second husband is going to have to divorce her, and the child is considered a mamzer. Divir the mayor. The Chum ain't a blood mamzer. The Chum say the child is not a mamzer. We agree maybe that we will force the second husband to divorce her, because, as Tosfos said on Amud Aleph, we haven't, not only we don't have a funa neftah, we haven't had the signatures validated before, but still. So therefore, Kate said yes. Tosfos says that no. What the Gemara means is, what do you do in order to allow her to stay married to her second husband? The Chachamim are saying there's no question either way, the child is not a mamzer. But what do we do without what we're going to say now? She's going to have to divorce her second husband. What do we do to avoid that? What do we do? Ketzad yasa yitlenu hemena. Let the shliach take the get back from the woman. V'yasa v'yitlenu v'neishnayim. Let him give it back to her in the presence of two eidim. V'yem v'fana nechtem v'fana nechtem. And at that point, he can say v'fana nechtem v'fana nechtem. So we see that Braita clearly says that you do it in front of two. But that shows what Rabbi Yechon is saying, that you have to do it only in front of two. And that, in fact, is the halacha.
Well, it could be in front of two just in this case.
No, there's no reason to distinguish between this case and a regular case. Kiyum Shardis, yeah.
Right.
Okay, the question is, but a mayor, Mishum Belayam, we'll find an after the Yates of Avlat Mamas. What is Rabbi Meir saying? Because, and it's a kasha to get, after all, because he didn't say these four words, upon an after, upon an after, you're going to make her get divorced, you're going to make the kid a mamzer. The answer is yes. Rameir is going according to his own svara. Anyone who changes the formula that the Chachamim made as far as Gittin, Mafeya is the formula. Yeah, like the Mafeya of Brachas. Yeah. So that's it then. That's why Rameir is being machmir like that. Apparently not. According to Rameir, apparently not. The problem is that you were Mashanah Mafeya Shetel Chachamim. Yeah. Okay. So now we have to deal with the next question is, when we say b'fanei nichta, but the get was written in my presence, a get consists of 12 lines, we said at the beginning of the sefer. How much of that does he have to be there for? So, how much of the writing of the get does he have to be there for? So, b'hedya bo'i lo asui gitzer, b'hedya was going to be a shliach halacha for a get. This Bahedia, by the way, the Pashtus is the same Bahedia as in the famous story of Rava and Abaye and Brachas, where he was a dream interpreter and he used to give good explanations to Abaye and bad ones to Rava, and eventually he got in trouble for that. But it's the same money, because Abaye paid him and Rava didn't. Yeah, so the Pashtus is the same. And in the end, Rava met up with him many years later and said, and now I realize that all the tragedies and things that I had in my life were all because of you and your bad interpretation. In particular, you because of one of your interpretations, I ended up divorcing my wife, the daughter of Krista.
Was it Rava or Rava?
Rava. And therefore he cursed him that he should end up in the hands of a government that won't show him any rachmanos. And the Gemara tells a story over there how he ended up getting executed by the Romans many years later. But the Pashtus, this is the same behavior. Anyway, so also the Kamei de Rav Achi, they have a Muna Gitti. So he came to Rav Achi, who was in charge of Gittin. Now, why was he in charge? So Rashi says because the Gemara mentions in a number of places the dinim of Gittin and the dinim of Kedushin are very complicated, and someone who does not know Emishayin Idiyah B'Kiv Gittin the Kedushin, somebody who does not know the ins and outs of halachas of Gittin Kedushin, should not be involved with them. Therefore, they set up. Rav Achi was a great Talmid Chacham. So therefore, in each large city, they would set up one great person that he's responsible for looking after all the Gittin that are done in that city. So Rav Achi was the one in charge for that in his city. So how much of it do I need to be there for? Amalei, and Rav Achi tells him, Tzarech HaTalamet, I'll call Oisvois. You have to be there while they're writing every single letter in the get. Also, the Kamei did Rav Ami and Rav Achi. So then Bahedia went to ask Rav Ami and Rav Achi, Amri my loitzricha. So they tell him, actually, you don't need to. You only need to be there for one line. Now, what do we mean by one line? Not the whole 12 lines, just the first line. Now, what do we mean by the first line? So Tosfos says over here, it just means literally the one line. Tosfos says literally it means the first line. We have to know, later on in the Masechta, we're going to be talking extensively, within the body text of the get itself, there's two parts. There's the essential parts of the get, in particular the words Hareyat Mocheres Lachodem, which appear in the middle or towards the end of the get. You have also the names of the husband and wife, etc. Those things are called the Torah. Torah means like the essence, the basics. And then you have the rest of the boilerplate of the get, the Dandy, the Chiminai, whatever, the whole lashon over there, Torah to Shvachas, whatever. That part is called the Torah, like the boilerplate. So Tosfos over here says it doesn't matter. The fact that you're there only for the first line. The first line is not necessarily part of the Torah. The first line contains the date. It's not necessarily part of the Torah. It's the date. But once they wrote that first line, Lishma, then we can assume the Sofer wrote the rest of it Lishma. You don't have to be there for the other 11 lines in order to know that. Later on in the Masechta, later on in this parak, Rashi learns differently. Rashi says the one line you need to be there for is the one line of the Torah, the line Habayat Matarah Chachadim. So you don't have to be there at the beginning of the writing, but you have to be there in the middle when they get to the line Habayat Matarah Chachadim.
Because
he's standing, he sees that the Sofer is writing it, either the husband and wife are there, or at least, you know, the Sofer tells him, whatever the point is, that's not just, for example, the Sofer was writing it, let's say, for practice, and happened to use names that match the names of the parties that are getting divorced, that would be Shalom Lishma. The Shliach is there, either at the beginning of the writing, or in the middle, as the case may be, and he sees that that part was written Lishma. That's what I'm saying, because either the husband and wife are actually there, or they're there, either they're there, or at least the husband is there, whatever, because we're talking about it's going to be transported, or the Sofer tells him, or of Achi, or whoever is in charge of getting the get, tells him, whatever. The point is that once you see that part of it is written in the Shema, you know the rest of it has been written in the Shema. You know the Sofer didn't just write it for practice, for example. And that's the important point. So you only need to be there for the one line. So you're going to say, why? Let me be machmir. Let me stand there for the whole 12 lines. No. If you do that, then people are going to call into question who you're getting. Since the halacha is the shliach halacha only has to be there for the first line, if you are trying to be machmir and be there for the whole thing, people are going to think that Uli and Gittin were not kosher.
Yeah.
Now this gets into a very general discussion that the post can have about the question of being machmir more than previous generations. We see on the face of it, we see from this gemara that you're not supposed to. But there are a number of previous generations said one line. You can't say yeah. So right. So a number of Achronim say, though, that the difference is, yes, you can be machmir on previous generations, but not in matters of Gittin v'Kiddushin. Because matters of Gittin v'Kiddushin don't just affect the immediate time now, they affect future generations also. If you're going to, let's say, going to be machmir on the halacha of Kashrus, where they used to be make on it, and now you're machmir, big deal. You're not harming the previous generations.
And say that the next generation is going to hold by your
chumrah. Fine, but I'm hold by your chumrah. Not a big deal. But if you say now, for example, you're going to make a certain new rule in Gittin, and then people are going to say, well, why didn't they ever do that before? Must be people who got remarried based on those Gittin, the children of Mamzerim or whatever. You're going to create that issue. Therefore, you can't do that. That's also why they answer the question, once Rav Achi gave him a psak, how is your logic go to Rav Ami and Rav Achi did a different psak? That's why. Same idea. Same idea, because to be machmer, when it was the Moshi Laz, that's yeah.
Okay. So the question is, when you receive a psak from a guy, you cannot go and ask the same question
to another rub, unless you tell the second rub what the first one said.
If you don't.
Okay. Rabbi Baba Chana Icy Gitter, one time Rabbi Baba Chana brought a get from Keres Israel. Pauge ichtiv kamei or pauge lo ichtiv kamei. Half of it had been written in his presence, half not. Also, kamei did Rabbi Elazar. So he came to Rabbi Elazar to ask, is that okay? Amalei, he says, yeah. I feel like kosher. L'shita achas l'shma, shuven etzaris. Even if only one line and it was written l'shma, then that's it. You don't need anything else. Rav Ashi says, you don't even need that. Hakibu kan kolosav kan megilta. Even if you just hear the kan of the pen, kolos is the pen that the sofer writes with, or the kan of the megillah, of the scroll. What are the kan? So Rashi has two possibilities. It means one is that you hear you overhear the sofer preparing the quill or preparing the pen or preparing the piece of parchment for it and saying at the time that I'm making it lishma. So once you hear that, then you hear him, let's say, sharpening the quill or whatever,
right.
Or reed in those days, they use whatever. You hear him sharpening it, and as he's doing that, he's saying, I'm doing this because I'm getting ready to write a get for Yossel and Rachel. That's enough for the same thing, kan megilta. That's one explanation. And then Rashi says a second explanation, which he prefers, kan komasa, and kan megilta means the sound of the pen writing and the writing on the megillah. So you hear the sofer writing and saying that it's lishma, then that's enough. You don't need to actually be present there. Tanya Kama says that Rashi, in fact, we learn a braise like Rashi, and maybe getting them dinner, I'm a filler who abides the sofer valia, even if the shliach was on the first floor and the sofer who was writing the get was on the second floor, or who valia the sofer abides, or the other way around, he was in the attic and the sofer was on the ground floor, I feel the nichnas vieta kolayim koloy, or even if he's going in and out throughout the day while the get is being written, caution. So the question is, you have to think of it. Who buys the sofa by the like a holiday? If he's in the if he's on the first floor and the sofa is on the second floor, he obviously doesn't see anything. Obviously it must be that he heard the sound, either the sound of the preparing or the sound of the writing, and that's good enough. What? Why not? So you can hear that. You can hear the scratching. In fact, Rashi says that's why do we call it kan kumasa and kan migilta? Because as you're writing over there, there's kind of sound like.
If you're upstairs writing something with a kumasa, I wouldn't.
No, because you're thinking nowadays people write with a ballpoint pen. Of course, ballpoint pens are silent. But when you're writing with a scratchy quill or reed or whatever on parchment, yeah, it's going to make a bit of noise. Yeah. So we said in the Braisa that even if he is going in and out all day, it's kosher. Man, who's the person who's going in and out all day? Do you mean that the shliach is going out? Well, of course. You say that it's kosher even if he never saw the sofer writing at all. He only heard. How much more so if he's in there for part of it and then leaves and then in there and then leaves? Ella sofer. So you're going to say it means a sofer if he writes part of the get and then leaves and then comes back later? Pshita, well, of course. Why? Mishum the nifsas v'yetzin nifsas. Why would he think the Megillah, the get is possible just because the sofer stepped out in the middle? The answer is, yes, but we're not just talking about he went out. We're talking about, let's say, he went out into the marketplace where there's many other people.
The sofer.
The offer, and then he came back. So you might think, what should we be concerned? Maybe while he was in the marketplace, he met up with somebody who told him, hey, you're in the middle of writing a get for Yossel and Rachel, right? Hey, well, my name is Yossel. I also need a get for Rachel. You know what? Finish off that get in my name instead of in theirs, and you'll write another one for them later. Kamash Malon, we're not worried about that. So therefore, even if he misses for Yossel, No, it's because it's not a mashkiach. But once he started writing the shame, one person, we're not concerned that he's going to switch midstream and start writing for another person. Yeah, exactly. Because the first line is just the name. By the way, I don't know. I guess based on what the Gemara is saying over here, that applies to the shliach. Actually, it seems it also applies to the edim as well. I've been an aide on Gittin a couple of times, and the sofer told me once he finished writing the first line, I could leave and just come back, and then just come back. At the end to sign the get. Apparently the same idea, because the Edom are signing that it was done the Shema, and once the first line was written the Shema, you know the rest of it is written on the Shema. Itmar, now the Gemara has a new discussion. Bavel, what is the din of Bavel as far as all this we've been talking about, Eretz Yisrael versus the din of Yam? What about Bavel? Rav Amak Eretz Yisrael, the Gittin or Shmuel Amak Chutz La'aretz. So Rav says it has the same din as Eretz Yisrael, as far as Gittin, meaning that if you're transporting a get from one place to another in Bavel, then you don't need Befana Nechta, Befana Nechta. Shmuel Amak Chutz La'aretz. Shmuel says Chutz La'aretz. So if you're in the same country within Bavel, in the same province within Bavel, fine. Even in the same province in Chutz La'aretz, we said you don't need to. But if you're in different provinces in Bavel, then Shmuel would say you have to, and Rav says you don't. Should we say that they're arguing on the following point? That Rav would hold the problem is that they don't know Lishma. The opinion that all this time we've been saying Rabba has been saying. The Hani community, so the people in Bavel are well familiar with the halachas. They know Lishma. Therefore, we don't have to worry. Umar Sav, whereas Shmuel would hold the Fishain Edim at Surin the Chaim, but you're not going to have Edim available to certify it. Behind Nami Leshchichi, well, in Bavel also, from one region to another of Bavel, you're not going to find. Vitisbera, the Umar says, but how could you think that? Har Rabba, as we said many times, Har Rabba Islay the Rabba. We said that Rabba agrees with Rabba's reason. So if you're worried about Lishma, you also have to be worried about the Fishain Edim at Surin the Chaim, right? So why would Rab say, just because they know Lishma, it's good? The fact is, they're not going to argue about whether people are traveling back and forth from one area to Bavel or another. They're not arguing on Matthias. So what is it? No, we can say both Rab and Shmuel hold the problem is with a get from a Nisayam is there's no Edim available to certify it. So how does that work as far as Bavel? Rav Sava came in the Ikka Misivta Mishkach Shechi. Rav figures, since there are the great yeshivas in Surah and in Hauda, or later on in Surah and in Pumbedissa, Talmidim are always traveling back and forth between the two yeshivas, and from the other cities, people are always streaming to these yeshivas to learn. Therefore, Shechi, you have enough people enough people traveling around that, yes, you can find Hayden Mitsui in the family. You have a gift that's brought from some outlying village at Babel. Inevitably, you're going to find people who came from that village to one or the other of the Yeshivas. In modern terms? I mean, they're both in Iraq. I'm not sure that it's so certain. Pumbedisa is close to, I don't know, you remember about 10 years ago in the news, Fallujah was in the news a lot. Pumbedisa is in that general vicinity. And Nahaja, I think, is a little south of that, and Surah is further south than that. So I'm not sure in modern terms where they come out exactly. Anyway. So therefore, Rav says, there's no problem in Babel. Ushmul self, I'm a sifter, bigger side treaty. Shmuel takes the view, yes, but the Bnei HaYeshivas are busy with their learning. They're not going to recognize people's signatures. Okay. Itmar Nami, so they had a similar discussion. Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Huna. Osinu Atzmeinu B'Bavel, Karet Yisrael L'Git, Miki Osa Rav L'Bavel. Ever since Rav came to Babel, we made ourselves in Babel, just like Eretz Yisrael, as far as the Dinim of Gittin. Now, what do we mean by that? Rashi says what it means is, before Rav came to Babel, yes, there were always Tamar Chachamim in Babel. Not always. Originally, when the Jewish people were first taken into Galus and Babel, the first wave that Nebuchadnezzar took to Babel 11 years before the Churban were the Chorash and the Masker. The simple meaning of Chorash and Masker is craftsmen and locksmiths. But the Gemara explains, we'll learn at the end of the Masechta, the famous thing that the Chorash and Masker really are the great Tamar Chachamim of that period. They were brought first. Because Chorosh represents the idea, like when they opened their mouth, Chorosh, like Cheresh, when they were like closed, like mute. When they spoke, everybody else would be mute because they hear what they have to say. And Masker, once they closed the topic, nobody else could open it back up again because like they'd have the final word. So therefore, so they established, so, this, so there were great Tamar Chachamim bubble at that point. So Rashi says, according to the Gersa we have over here in Rashi is Loi Paskat Tzara Mehem. But on the side over here it says that really actually but the Torah never ceased by them, but you didn't have great yeshivas where people are traveling back and forth. Only when Rav came to Babel. Rav lived most of his life in Eretz Yisrael. Rav originally was born in Babel. He was raised there, but then he came to Eretz Yisrael. He lived by Rebbe for many, many years. And even after Rebbe passed away, he was still in Babel for a long time. Eventually in Eretz Yisrael. Later on, already when he was old, he left Eretz Yisrael and moved back to Babel and set up the famous yeshiva in Surah. And around that time, Shmuel set up the yeshiva in Nahauda. So from then on, you have great yeshivas in Babel, and from then on, they say, Rav Huna is saying that we could consider ourselves like Eretz Yisrael in these
years. Which year was that in?
So we're talking, the Shmuel Goren says that the year that Rav came to, from back from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he says the year is, well, he puts it in terms of Minyan Shtaris, but putting it in terms of years since creation that we're familiar with, it's the year 3979, 219 of the Common Era. That was the year that Rav moved from Eretz Yisrael back to Babel, and that became, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, that became a watershed in the history of the Jewish people in Babel. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that what we're saying is not that a new halacha came into being in Babel once Rav came. It means when Rav came and set up his yeshiva, he said, you know what, all this time you guys in Babel have been assuming you have to say Bufana Nesem, you should know, because going back now, 500 years before, 600 years before, there have always been great Tamar Chachamim in Babel, therefore all this time it was never necessary to say Bufana Nesem. So according to Rashi, it's a new thing that was starting now, according to Tosfos, it's something that always was that way.
This, when he left to Babel again, it was... The
Romans had been occupying Eretz Yisrael for 200 years, or 300 years. Continuing. I mean, at that point, they occupied all of it. No, the reason why, I don't know why he left. Actually, the Gemara in Yuma tells us the reason why he left. The Gemara near the end of Yuma, we learned a story over there that Rav one time unintentionally offended Rav Chanina, and therefore many years later, when Rav Chanina became the Rosh Hashiva, what was the story there exactly? So many years. So Rav went to ask Mechila by Rav Chanina many times, and Rav Chanina never wanted to forgive him, and therefore Rav ended up leaving Eretz Yisrael for Babel. Like Mark said, the reason why Rav Chanina didn't forgive him is that he knew that Rav is destined to become a great Rosh Hashiva, and look, I'm the Rosh Hashiva here in Eretz Yisrael. How is Rav going to be a Rosh Hashiva here if he's going to end up staying here in Eretz Yisrael? It's going to have to be over my dead body. It'll only be after I pass away. I don't want that. Better let him leave for Babel and become a great Rosh Hashiva there, and that way I'll still stay safe.
And if he had told him, I forgive you and go back to...
No, but that's not the point. He wanted him to... Whatever, we learned over there. Okay, anyway. So, Master Rabbi Yumi. Yes, Rabbi Yumi says, what are you talking about? You're telling me Bavel was like Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Merechem L'Mizrach, Merechem K'Mizrach, that from Rechem eastward is considered Medina Sayyam, and Rechem itself is on the border of Eretz Yisrael, and it's considered like the east. Me'ashkelon Nadarim, Me'ashkelon Kadarim, Me'akkel Tzafon, Me'akkel Tzafon, so from Akkai and northward is considered Medina Sayyam. For Babel, it's pointed out to Israel, and Babel is north of Eretz Yisrael. The Eved says to Yirmiyah, from the north, the evil will break loose over Eretz Yisrael. So we see Babel is in the north. It's northeast. Usually in Shas, Eretz Yisrael is called Ma'arava, the west, relative to Babel. But geographically, it's northwest. Especially, I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, practically speaking, we're talking about over here in terms of the north, because when you're traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, you can't go directly through the desert, through the parts that are nowadays parts of Iraq and Syria. It's a desert. You're not going to be able to survive there. Necessarily, you have to go north in order to go south. So therefore, like when the part of Babel where you leave to go to Eretz Yisrael, you're going southward always. So therefore, in that sense, we can think of Babel as being northward of Eretz Yisrael. Interesting thing, by the way, they say, why do they need a pasuk for it? For you just look at a map and you see. The answer is a proof from Torah is the most powerful proof, even more than a proof that you can see with your own eyes. Yeah. Also true. Yeah. Okay. Utnan, and we learn in the mission, and Meir and Akka carries Yisrael to Gittin. Okay, so the Meir says that Akka is considered like Eretz Yisrael as far as the dinim of Gittin. Still, after the Meir, like Carmel, about Akka the Makarva. Even the Meir is only talking about Akka, where even though Akka at least is. Well, when we say very close, what do we mean? When we talk about it very, very close, we're not necessarily talking about that every single Yid or every single town in Eretz Yisrael knew about the Dinim of Gittin. But we're talking about, we're dealing with, there's a central area, a central core of settlement in Eretz Yisrael. Akko is sort of on the outskirts of that. So therefore, like, you know, in Akko, fine, you know, they themselves may not be so familiar with the Dinim, but they're close enough to the areas, to Pori, Tveria, the other areas in the Galil where they are well familiar, that therefore we can consider. Abba Bubble, the Merach Galoi, but not Bubble, as well, that's way far away. Okay, so Rabbi Yumi asked the question, he also answered it. You know what? Labadmi Bubble, you're right, the Mishnah, when it gives the borders, it means leaving out Bubble. Bubble is a case unto itself. Okay, Ad Heichon Hu Bubble, so now we have to ask them what is considered the borders of Bubble for this purpose. Rapapa amak machloikas for Yuchsin, kach machloikas for Gittin. So Rapapa says the same machloikas there is as far as Yuchsin, there is as far as Gittin. Namely, the Gemara discusses in the last parak of Kiddushin that, in general, if a man wants to marry a woman from Babel, he does not have to investigate her Yichus. Because in general, the families of the Jewish families in Babel were Miyuchasin. We know that there's no Psula Yichus among them. All the Psula Yichus, the Gemara explains over there, Ezra arranged for them to come with him to Eretz Yisrael.
What happened to those Yichus?
They lived in Eretz Yisrael, but therefore in Eretz Yisrael, if you're going to marry somebody, you have to check out their yuchos, make sure there's no mamzerim or what have you in them. In Babel, you don't need that. And the Gemara has a long discussion over there in Kiddushin of the exact borders of Babel for that purpose. So the Papa, outside of which there might be mixtures or whatever, yeah. So therefore, the Papa is saying the same borders that are for there are for here. So the Papa is saying the same machlokas. Whatever Rav says a certain thing in Babel, so he would say as far as Yochsin, he would say the same thing as far as Gittin. Shmuel would say a different place, etc. Rav Yosef Amar, no, machlokas for Yochsin. No, the machlokas in Kiddushin is only as far as Yochsin. Abel the Gittin, but as far as our din of Gittin, Bafana Nechem, Divrei Hakolat Avrachin Yonah de Gishra. Everybody agrees that Babel extends for this purpose only until the second willow swamp by the bridge. Or not willow, the second willow area, the area where willows grow by the bridge. It was a well-known landmark in those days, obviously. Yeah, okay. The Gemara tells, Rav Chista Matzrich Ma'aktisfon L'Bei Ardashir. Rav Chista, when a get was being brought from Aktisfon to Bei Ardashir, he would require them to settle from Aktisfon. Well, they're both in Iraq. They're both in Iraq, but they're on opposite sides of the river. They're on opposite sides of the Chidechel River, or the Tigris. So from Aktisfon to Bei Ardashir, he would require them to settle from Aktisfon. From Bei Ardashir, Aktisfon L'Bei Matzrich. But if it was the other way around, he would not require them. So should you say that means that Rav Chista holds the problem is Rava's problem about the Shema, and therefore the people of Bei Ardashir know the dinim of the Shema, therefore we don't have to say we're fine enough and bring it from them, but the people of Aktisfon don't, and therefore we do. And as usual, the question with Tisper, how could you think that? Well, Rabbi Yisrael did other. We already said that anybody who says there's a problem with Shema also says there's a problem with Eidim Mitzurim L'Kaimai. So you have to ask, are Eidim Mitzurim L'Kaimai in one direction or another? And if it's not Mitzurim in one direction, why would it be Mitzurim in the other? Ella, no. The Kula Alma B'Eidim L'Kaimai, no. We can say that everybody would agree that the reason why you need Eidim, why you need B'Fan HaNechtam, B'Fan HaNechtam, is because you need Eidim to validate it. Mahani, the difference is, given to Azli, Lashukah, to Hassan, the people of Be'arishir are always going to the market in Aktisban. They cross the river and go to the major markets are there in Aktisban. Aktisban was the capital city in those days. So they're always going there.
How do we know that it's this
way? Because that's what he's saying. Listen, they're always going to the marketplace there. Therefore, Hanach Yadi, Bachasimus Yadi Dahani. So therefore, the people of Aktisban are familiar with the signatures of the people of Ardashir, because they're always coming there for business and signing IOUs and whatever, and therefore they get to know their signatures. And also, therefore, if you have a get that's sent to Aktisban, people from Ardashir are always going to be coming there on business for the market, and therefore they'll be able to validate it. But the reverse is not true. The people of Aktisban have no particular reason to come to Ardashir, so therefore they don't... So therefore, when the people of Ardashir come there, the people of Aktisban are busy with their selling, so they don't pay attention to learn the other way around. Sorry, the Bnei Ardashir are too busy with buying over there in Aktisban, therefore they don't get to be familiar with the signatures of the Aktisban people. So therefore, that's what we're saying. So if you bring it from Ardashir to Aktisban, you don't need to say B'fan HaNechtam, because if there's any question brought up, it'll be easy enough to get the signatures validated. The people of Aktisban themselves may recognize it, other people from Ardashir will come to recognize them, etc.
So Ardashir come to
Aktisban for business. For supplies, right. But the reverse is not true. So therefore, if it's brought from Aktisban to Ardashir, you need to be able to say B'fan HaNechtam, because otherwise you're not going to find enough people in Ardashir who know the signature yet. Another
people of Ardashir, they come back to Ardashir, what's the meaning of
fine, but so obviously if you bring a guest in Ardashir, there's no problem, yeah. More opinions on this. Rababar Avur Matrich Ben Arsa La'Arsa. These next three Amoroyim that we're going to talk about, Rababar Avur and Rav Sheshet and Rav Sheshet, these next two are all in Mechuzah. So, Rababar Avur Matrich Ben Arsa La'Arsa. So he required people to say B'fan HaNechtam, even if they're bringing from one side of the street to the other side. Rav Sheshet Matzich Meshchuna Meshchuna. Rav Sheshet would say even if you're bringing from one neighborhood to the next, even on the same side of the street, a neighborhood for this purpose is defined, Rashi says, as three adjacent houses.
Side to side.
Meshchuna Meshchuna means neighborhood to neighborhood, block to block, let's say. But Rav Matzich White Meshchuna, and Rav would say even if you're taking a get from one place to another on the same block, you need B'fan HaNechtam. So the question is why? Rav himself is the one who's saying the problem is no Eidim. Why would you need within the same block? Of course you could find Eidim. The answer is shiny. But in Mechuzah, it's a 90. It's different. The people in Mechuzah, these three Amoroyim are all living in Mechuzah, they move around a lot. They're busy merchants. So therefore, they don't stay home very much. They're always traveling. So therefore, yes, they don't necessarily even get to know their close neighbor's signatures. So Rababar Avur would take the view that they know the signatures of the people on the same side of the street, but not on the other side. Rav Sheshet would say not even on the same side of the street, that's the next block. And Rabba would say not even on the same block. Which, by the way, Tosfos says, based on this then, nowadays people travel around a lot. Therefore, nowadays you're going to say B'fan HaNechtam anywhere.
You do need to,
because everybody is always traveling, so people don't get to know each other's signatures. It's also a question, by the way, the Rishonim deal with the question, what about in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, you need to say B'fan HaNechtam. The Mishnah obviously had said that not. But nowadays, or at least, you know, I mean, nowadays, again, Eretz Yisrael is repopulated, and there are a lot of people there, but, in, you know, 100 or more years ago, it wasn't. People didn't travel around Eretz Yisrael very much, and therefore most Rishonim said that, yes, in Eretz Yisrael, you do have to say B'fan HaNechtam also, especially because not necessarily anymore could we assume that they're all familiar with the Shema either. Rav Chanan Mishtoi, Rav Chanan told the following story. Rav Kahana Isid Yitzir, one time Rav Kahana was a shliach to bring a get, I don't know whether it was from Surah to Nahavda or vice versa. Also, Rav Kahana, so he came to ask Rav, And he asks, do I have to make the declaration or not? So Rav tells him, you don't actually have to say it. But you know what? If you do say it, you don't have to say it because we're in Babel. But if you do say it, then you'll gain by it. There'll be a gain by it. You will have accomplished something. What does he mean that you will accomplish something? He means the baal ma'ara loy mashkechem. He means Rav means that if now after you say b'fanenechtem, and the husband comes and objects that the get is not valid, loy mashkechem, we wouldn't pay attention to him because that's what we said. The whole purpose of b'fanenechtem is to avoid that. Otherwise, well, according to Rashi, it would be possible, and according to Tosfos, at least it would be laws. It would be questionable. Ketitania,
is it the same?
No, not the same. Possible means it's outright possible, and if he remarries, then you have then the children are on Zedim, etc. If there's laws, it means that people are going to be nervous about marrying her. But if they do, then we won't say the children are on Zedim, but people are going to be nervous about marrying her at all. Ketitania, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Maisa ba'adam echad shevi get b'fnei Rabbi Shmuel. It happened once that somebody brought a get to Rabbi Shmuel. Amaloi, tzarech ani loy melech hanenech, v'fanenech temayini tzarech. Do I have to or not? Amaloi, b'nei behechan hata, where are you coming from? Amaloi, b'nei m'kfar sisai, ani I'm coming from Kfar Sisai. Name of a place. Amaloi, in that case, Amaloi, so Rabbi Shmuel tells him, in that case, yes, tzarech hata loy melech hanenech, v'fanenech tem, shaloi tizrafis le'edim. So that this woman will not have to require edim in case the husband brings objections. After the man left, Nichnas the fun of Rabbi Loi. Rabbi Loi came into Rabbi Shmuel's office. Amalai Rabbi, Baalik Farsi Sai, we've lost the Tumah. Why did you make him say before Nechem, before Nechem? Baalik Farsi Sai, we've lost the Tumah of Israel. Farsi Sai is surrounded by Israel, as we learned the other day. It's even closer to Sipori, which is one of the centers of Jewish life in Israel. In those days, it's even closer to Sipori than Akka is. What's the matter? We learn in our mission, Rameir, I'm Akka, Keret Israel, and Gifn. Rameir says that Akka is outright like Eretz Yisrael. After the Rabbanon, even the Rabbanon don't argue with him only on Akka, which is very far away from the main population centers of Eretz Yisrael. Abel, Kfar Sisai, the Makar Beloi, but Kfar Sisai is very close. Why are you making him say before Nechtel, before Nechtel? On the Loi, and he tells him, my son, be quiet, Hoyo v'yotza hadava b'heter, because the matter has come out of the heter. Meaning, in other words, that once the heter has already been given, that b'fanei nechtem b'fanei nechtem is enough, and that'll prevent the husband bringing any error, then that's good enough. So therefore we see that, you're right, in other words, Rabbi Shmuel was saying, technically he does not have to say b'fanei nechtem, but I told him he should, in order that way it'll prevent the husband from being able to bring any error. And otherwise, she would have to bring aid in for that purpose.
You then decide, if that's part of your question, but
so that's the thing, maybe it wasn't signed in his presence.
No, the
shliach, in other words, the shliach came with a get that not necessarily had been written or signed in his presence. So now he's saying, is this a good get, or do I have to go back and get another one? Yeah. Okay, the Gemara says, what do you mean? That's exactly what Rabbi Shmuel said. He said that you go say b'fanenechtem, so she doesn't need edim. So shouldn't Rabbi Lion realize that? Why is he asking? The matter was not completed in front of him. Rabbi Lai had not heard the last words. He only heard that Rabbi Shmuel had said, you need to say b'fanenechtem. He did not hear the last part, shalei tizrafis le'edim. That's what made him ask, why does he have to, if Christ Messiah is so close to Eretz Yisrael? And Rabbi Shmuel explained to him, I said, shalei tizrafis le'edim, and the point of my saying that was that I wanted to protect her.
So therefore
we see from that, this is the point that we're saying, that Rav is telling Rav Kahana that even in a case when you don't have to say b'fanenechtem, if you do, you're still creating an advantage for the woman by doing it. That now she doesn't have to bring edim against the husband's error. Yeah.
In reverse, the get is still kosher. The
get would still be kosher even if he didn't, that way. Okay. Shalach loy Rabbi Yosser l'Rav Chista. Rabbi Yosser sent the following question to Rav Chista. So far we've been talking about within Eretz Yisrael or from Medina Fayam to Eretz Yisrael, and we talked on Amud Aleph about within Babel. What about Gittim that come from Babel to Eretz Yisrael? So he said, it wasn't a question actually, he sent him a statement that Gittim that come from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, although we also lived in Eretz Yisrael, ain't Sarach Loim b'fanenechtem. They do not need to make this declaration.
From Babel to
Eretz Yisrael. So, descending Rav Chista, you should know, the next time that you have a get that's being written by you in Babel, and the shliach is going to be bringing it, you don't have to require the shliach to be standing there during the writing and during the signing.
Because they know the halacha.
Well, wait. So should you say that means that you have to hold the reason why you need Mufana Nechta, Mufana Nechta is because of the Shema, and in Bavel they know about the Shema. And again, as usual, the question of the Tisbara, how could you think that? Or Rabba Islay the Rabba. You should still have the problem that ain't any Mitzvah in the Kaima. Ella, no. The Kulam will be in the Kaima. We can say everybody agrees.
Rabba,
mean that Rabba agrees with Rabba's reason. He says you have both problems, Lishma and Adim. So even if you avoided the problem of Lishma, because B'nai Bavel know about Lishma, what are you doing about the Adim that's still in the Kaima? So no, Ella, the Kulam will be in the Kaima. Everybody agrees that the issue is you need Adim to validate the signatures. But Rabbi Yosef is saying, since you constantly have people going back and forth, you always have people who are making Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and people who are going back to Babel, then there's a constant traffic, so therefore Mishkach Shilchi, there'll be enough people to be found to be able to certify the signatures. However, Omer Rabbi Yosef, man level under Rabbi Yosef Asamchu. Who says this Rabbi Yosef is somebody who we can rely on, that his opinion is valid? And not only that, I can show that actually I can show you something that he did wrong in halacha, which therefore should show that maybe he's not so knowledgeable. Ihu deshalach leil Rabbi Yehuda, he sent the following letter once to Rabbi Yehuda. Bnei Adam ha'ulin misham l'kan, these people who come from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and they stay in Eretz Yisrael for a long time learning, and they leave their wives and children back home in Babel. Hein kiyumu ba'atman, they are being mekayim in themselves. The following pasuk: Vayitnu hayelad bazona, they're giving away the child, they're giving away the boy for zona. Vayalda macher bayayin, and the girl they're giving away for wine. Vayishtu, and they're drinking. So what does that mean? Rashi says that Rashi is not literally, that they're not literally selling away their children, but Rashi says it means that they're treating their children like very carelessly, as if they're on the verge of selling them for these kinds of things. Tosfos says that what it means is, because what happens if the husband is away in Eretz Yisrael learning for many years, and the wife has a hard time supporting the family, so they end up having to work for food. But zoyna doesn't mean as a zoyna, as an act, what does it mean? Melosh of mezoynas. For food. So in other words, so Tosfos brings an example. Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi. There was one person who had no money, but he really wanted to go learn Torah. So he sold his daughter as a maid servant and went to learn. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is criticizing people who are doing that. Now, what the... So we learned in Erevin, actually, that b'mi miskayem es haTorah, who does the Torah last by? Somebody who makes an asmach zori ka'orev, somebody who says, you know what, yes, my family has needs, but learning Torah is more important than that. Let them be able to, the Gemara mentions over there that one of the Amiroyim says to his family, you know, you'll have those herbs in the field to live off of, whatever. In other words, you know, they may have a hard time of it, like Rabbi Akiva's wife and their family during the years that he was away learning, but learning Torah is the most important thing. Fine. So they have some kind of kemach, but you don't necessarily have to be there to provide that kemach. So well, that's what Rabbi Yosef is criticizing it.
What's the
quality? Yeah.
But
did
we see that?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Anyway, the problem is Rabbi Yosef is saying the cost of life was sirtut. He quoted that pasuk in the letter, and he did not do sirtut. He did not draw. He did not inscribe lines on the paper or the parchment in order to make sure that it's written straight. And the Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, and we find Rabbi Yitzchak says, Shtayim Kosvin, Sholoshen Kosvin. You're allowed to write two words of a pasuk without sirtut, but you're not allowed to write three. We must need it. That's the question. How are you talking? He doesn't know the halacha. Or Bryce says, Sholosh Kosvin Abba in Kosvin, that you're allowed to write three words, you're not allowed to write four words. He quoted here an entire pasuk, it's much more than three or four words. He didn't do sirtut. See, he doesn't know. So if he doesn't know that, who says he knows anything about the dinim of Gittin, that you can rely on his opinion, that you don't need Bufana Nechta, Bufana Nechtem? By the way, this whole question, the Gemara is going to deal later on more with this, where the Gemara is going to mention more cases of people who quoted Sukkim in letters and did Sirtur. Practically speaking, you don't see nowadays when a person writes words from a pasuk that they do Sirtur. So what is this all about? So first of all, when it comes to writing, so Tosfos has a long discussion of it over here. First of all, when you're writing tefillin, when you're writing tefillin, the ikra din, all you need is sirtuf on the four sides of the parchment. You need a sirtuf on top, on bottom, and on the two sides. The rest of it, you can write without sirtuf, unless if the sefer does not know how to write straight lines without circles on every line, then you do that. In practice, Tefillin nowadays are usually written that way. The Zohar, so that's the thing. Technically, you don't need to. Technically, Tefillin, if a sofer is an expert and knows how to write straight lines without it, then all you need is one circle on top, one on bottom, and one on each side.
Now they have these lines. You have lines on it. The tables are
lines. Okay. Right. When it comes to a mezuzah, Tosfos goes on to say, it's a halacha l'moshe b'Sinai, that you need sutra for every single line. I'll say for Torah, Tosfos doesn't really get into the question about it. It's a machlokas apostim, I believe, whether a sefer Torah needs sutras on every line. In practice, of course, also, they do that nowadays. Now, here we're talking about in letters, though. So first of all, there is an opinion of Rishonim. I believe that Ramban says this, that all this that we're talking about over here only applies if you're writing it in Ksav Ashuri, in the letters that are used in Sefer Torah. Not if you're writing like in common handwriting, like we do nowadays, which is in no way kosher for Sefer Torah. That you can write as many words as you want without Sefer. Then there's that. Tosfos themselves discusses various possibilities, including, are you talking about that you're actually darshaning the Pasuk, or are you just using the words of the Pasuk as like you're using it as a figure of speech? So a lot of times when people quote Pesukim, they're not quoting it in order to darshan it or in order to learn something from it. They're using a Lashon HaPasuk to make it sound nicer or whatever. So you have a heter in that case also. Tosfos also mentions another possibility you can do is you can write the words of the Pasuk in a different order. As a matter of fact, we find many, many places where the Gemara quotes Pesukim, it doesn't quote them exactly as they're written in Tanakh. And there are Achronim who say the reason why the Gemara did that is in order to avoid this issue.
Same idea.
No, well, eventually it would be written down. But yeah, eventually it would be written down. So then you have these issues. Yeah.
Or even Rashi sometimes doesn't
close them. Exactly. So that's the point. Yeah.
Can you do that?
So that if you're changing around the order of the words, then yeah, then you can write it down. Then you can write down.
No, but mentioning, can you quote a pasuk in a way that's not written in the Torah?
Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's the thing. The Gemara often does that. Anyway, so back to the Gemara over here. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, Rabbi Yosef doesn't know that din. Who says he's such a great person that we can rely on his opinion as far as gittin? Amalei Abayas. Abayas answers him back. Listen, altu called the lawyer the other Rabbi Yitzchak lav gaver abahu. So what? You're going to tell me anybody who doesn't know this particular din of Rabbi Yitzchak is not a great person? Listen, bishlaim milsa detalya b'svara l'chaye. I can understand if it was something of svara. Something that any logical person should be able to figure out on his own, and Rabbi Yosef didn't figure it out, fine, then you could say he's not a gaver rabbi, he's not a great person. Ha'gemari, this is a tradition, this is something that was taught in a braise or by Rabbi Yitzchak. Ha'gemari, let's say, look, okay, he didn't happen to hear this particular din. You can't fault him for that. But oid, and not only that, Rabbi Yosef would ask him, Mori Ayode, this Rabbi Yosef, the Avishter himself approved of what he said. Where do we see that? Abaye is telling Rabbi Yosef that the Eibishter himself approved of what Rabbi Yosef once said. Where do we see that? So now we're going to talk a little bit about the story of Pelegish Begiva. So the story of Pelegish Begiva, the outlines of it are, you had a man, a Levi from Har Ephraim, who had a Pelegish originally from Beis Lechem in Yehuda. But Tizna Ola Pelegish, the Pasuk says, there's a simple meaning of she was Mizana, and we're going to talk about soon what it really means. That whatever she left, she went back home to Beit Lechem. Her husband follows her there to try and get her back. He stays with her and her father for a few days in the house. They're eating, drinking, feasting, whatever. Eventually, he leaves. He's on his way back home. They left very late in the day, so they're not able to. It's getting late in the day. It's getting nighttime, and they have to find some place to stay for the night. They're passing by Yerushalayim. The lady says, "Let's not stay there. It's a Goyish city. Let's go find the Jewish city." Yerushalayim at that time was still occupied by the Goyim. So they travel on, they wind up in Giva and in the territory of Binyamin. They're in the city streets over there and nobody wants to take them in, nobody's a Machnitz Oirach, until there's one guy from Har Ephraim who takes them into his house. As they're in the house, or everybody starts surrounding the house and trying to bang down the door and threatening to do to the guests, like what the people of Sodom threaten to do to Lois and his guests. The guy for his own safety takes the Pelegish and then sends her out to them. They do what they do with her all night. In the morning, he finds her dead. He takes her home. He cuts her up into pieces and sends it all over Eretz Yisrael. Look what a horrible crime has been done here in Shevet Binyamin. We've got to do something about it. They wind up going to war, and Shevet Binyamin almost gets wiped out. That's the story of Pelegish Begira. Now the pasuk starts off that Tizna Olav Pelegish.
Shevet Binyamin goes to war with
the other 11 Shvatim. And the first two times they fight, Shape of Yemen killed several thousand soldiers from the other Shvatim. Eventually they realize that the Shvatim realize, you know what, we didn't really learn about this in Yoma, we didn't ask the Rumatumim properly, we asked whether we should go to war, we didn't ask whether we're gonna win. But the third time they ask and the Rumatum tells them you're gonna win, and the next day they go and they fight and they almost wipe out Shape of Yemen. And then you have the whole aftermath of the story that everybody had made a shavua that we're not going to allow our daughters to marry anybody from Shevet Binyamin, and they realize, what are we going to do? Shevet Binyamin is going to go extinct. And so they found 400 girls from Yavish Gilad, and then the other, they had the whole thing over there where the girls are dancing over there on Tuba Av in the vineyards, and Bnei Binyamin should go over there and grab themselves wives from them. And so the remaining 600 members of Shevet Binyamin were able to start new families and repopulate the Shevet.
How P.L.A.S. can a Shevet find another Shevet?
In this case, and that was part of the thing was, I mean, we talk about it a long time, we don't really have the time for it, but part of the idea was that when the rest of the Shvatim sent to Bnei Binyamin saying, you know what, these guys in Giva have done this terrible thing, you need to hand them over to the national Sanhedrin to be punished. And Bnei Binyamin took the view, mix out, this is a local affair. Every Shevet has its own Sanhedrin, we'll handle it locally, don't mix it. And that's where everything developed. So, the pasuk starts off the story about Tizna Ola Pilagshot. Now, the simple meaning is that it's Pilagshot with Mizana. But the point is, Tosfos says, for one thing, there's different opinions in the Gemara Sanhedrin what a Pilagshot is exactly. Is it that there's a Ksuba but no Kiddush? Is it that there's a Kiddush but no Ksuba? Or is it that there's no Kiddush and no Ksuba? Just they live together. But either way, so Tosfos points out, if she was literally Mizana, there's no reason he would have traveled to get her back. He wouldn't want her back in that case. So we have to assume that the word batizna does not mean literally. So therefore, what is it? Rabbi Yossi Amar Zvuv Matzala. So Rabbi Yossi said that one time her husband found a fly in the plate of food that she gave him, and therefore he got angry, and therefore she left. Batizna meaning not she was Mizana, but she left the house. Rabbi Yonah summoned Nima Matzala, and Rabbi Yonah says he found a hair. Now, for Ashkechet of Yosef Eliyahu, one time Rabbi Yosef met Eliyahu Anavi, Amalei Maika Ovid HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right now, what is Hashem doing? Amalei Osik B'Kadosh B'Giva, right now Hashem is learning the story of Pelagish B'Giva. Okay, well, my karma, so what is he saying? What taka was the first cause of this whole thing? He says, Amalei, he says, Ev Yosef B'Ni Kachu Eimer, Yonah B'Ni Kachu Eimer. The Eivishter is saying, my son of Yosef says that this is what happened, my son Yonah says that this is what happened. The Eivishter has no doubt. What was it? Which one happened? Amalei. Eliyahu told him. No. Eilu ve'eilu. Divrei Elokim Chayim. Both of them are Divrei Elokim Chayim. They're both true. What happened? Zvuv must have alighted. First, he found a fly in his food, but he was not makpid. He did not make a big deal about it. Nima must have a hikpid. Then he found a hair, and he did object. And that's when she left. So what happened? Why is he objecting to the hare and not the fly? So Amar Yehuda, it means Zvuv b'kayrav and nima ba'osamakim. The fly he found in the food. So fine, disgusting, but fine. He's not going to be so angry about that. Especially it may not have been her fault, etc. The nima, the hare he found ba'osamakim in her private area when they're having relations. Therefore, Zvuv me'isusa, the fly is just something disgusting. The nima sakanta. The hair is an actual sakana. Like I mentioned in various places, that there's the headwind and some other places that a hair can get entangled over there in the husband's aver and cause him an injury. So therefore, that he was angry about. Or ikadamri, another version, ibi ba'ibi ba'kaira, both of them were in his plate, but the difference is zvuv oinsa, zvuv is a fly is an oinus, and not necessarily could she have prevented it. But nima pshiosa, a hair in there means that she's being careless. And therefore, he got angry at that. So what's the point? So what do we see? What do we see? The Eibishter agreed with what Rabbi Yossi says. If after all, many Mephoshim ask, if after all we're saying that he only got angry with her over the hair, so why are we b'chlam mentioning the fly? It seems Rabbi Yossi is wrong. He says he got angry with her over the fly, and we see in the end that he got angry with her over the hair. No, what it is like this. So different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. Among them are that what it means is he got angry taka over the hair. But once he was angry over the hair, he also was angry over the fly. Before, I was willing to let the fly fly because it was disgusting and you couldn't, and maybe it wasn't your fault, etc. Now that I see that you're being careless as far as the nima, as far as the hair, or that's the sakana, or whatever, now I'm angry about the fly also. that's something that might not have been very obvious. The fact that Rav Yosef realized that shows that he really that the Eibishter agreed that his thing about the fly is really an important contributing factor.
Not fair, because even if it was a very important factor, the fact that he relinquished it once and for all the first time.
But that's the thing we're saying that he.
The second time.
So there's a lot of different other explanations that the Farshim give. One of an interesting one, Rav Yonasan Eibishter says he brings this from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that originally Jewish women b'chlal did not have pubic hair, did not have seir ever. Only once they started being mizaneh, then the Eibishter caused that they started growing hair there. So there, and he also explains that zvuv, a fly, represents princess. As we learn at the end of the Masechta, we'll talk about a case where a husband sees his wife acting princessly, and it's comparable to a person who finds a fly in his food. What does he do about it? There's three different ways to. And the fly is a tamadik, a disgusting creature. It goes everywhere, yeah. The Gemara also mentions in Brachas, for example, that the Isha Shunamit knew that Elisha is a great tzaddik because she never saw any flies by his food. So like even the flies knew to stay away because of the Kedusha, because there's no flies in the Mishmash, etc. So flies represent like the opposite of Kedusha, sort of, the princess. So therefore, when he saw now that there's hair over there, it means he knew, you know what, there's been a fly. There's been princessistic behavior, which maybe up until now I wasn't objecting to, but now I see it's gone further than regular princess. It is batizne in the simple meaning of znus, and therefore I'm angry. But we see the fly, therefore, also contributes to it. And then one more, I mean, there's a lot of other explanations, but the Pnei Yeshua brings an interesting one from Naftali Katz, the Smichas Chachamim. He says, we see from this, especially if we say Rabbi Yosef is saying that he found a fly in his food. What does that mean? It means Rabbi Yosef is darshaning that the word batizne does not mean znus, as we said before. Rather, it's meloshon mazon, meloshon food. Now, when he quoted the pasuk before in his letter to Rabbi Yehuda, criticizing the people who come to from Babel to Israel and leave their families behind, he used the expression vayitnu hayelad bazoina. Now, he didn't mean zoina as in the sense of a zoina, as in the sense that the Pasuk uses it, as in like the goyim are kidnapping Jewish kids and selling them in order to have money to be with a zoina. He means zoina in the sense of food. Therefore, what do we see? The Eibishter agrees with him. The Eibishter agrees that the word batizna olav pelagshay can be understood in the sense of food. Therefore, when he quoted that Pasuk, he was not quoting it with the original meaning. If he's not quoting it with the original meaning, then like Tosfos says, he doesn't need Sirtur. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef's objection to him falls away. You're saying, how you talk, and he didn't write a pasuk with Sirtur, and Abaye says, okay, maybe he didn't know better based on this. Abaye is saying, no, he did know better. He's quoting the pasuk as a melitza, as a figure of speech, rather than its literal meaning, and in that case, like Tosfos says, he does not need Sirtur. So he's good. Doesn't matter. The intention is important, yeah.
Well,
that's what the Smicha Chachamim is explaining. That Abaye is saying now that we see the Eibishter accepted the understanding that batizne can mean that she spoiled his food with a fly. Then now we understand that vayikra yelav bazoina can also mean for food. So Amar Chista lo oilam al yatil adam eimi yaseira b'seich beisei. A person should always be careful not to make not to terrorize his household too much, not to make them too afraid of him.
Maybe
we have the same. We talk about it in a minute.
A little Aima,
a little Aima, fine, as it is appropriate, but the Aima Yetzera, no. Shari Pelegish Begiver Hitel Aleh Baila Aima Yetzera, because we see in this case of Pelegish Begiver, her husband made her, was exceptionally harsh towards her. That's what when there was a Nima that she ran away. The Hipula coming above us means Yol, and the upshot of it was that many tens of thousands of Jews were killed. All coming from this fact that she felt forced to run away, to run back to her father's house. And Amar Behold Amar, Avkalamakum Eva Yisera Psech Bey, say anybody who puts too much of a fear in the members of his household, he will wind up coming to three Aveiros, Gile Arayis or Shvichos Damim V'Chilul Shabbos. Now how is that? So Rashi says as follows, Gile Arayis is, suppose you have, it comes the time for a woman to go to the mikveh, but let's say it's cold, so she doesn't want to go because it's too uncomfortable, but her husband is a mean kind of guy, she's afraid of him, therefore she's going to falsely claim that she toiled when she really didn't, because otherwise they'll be mad at her and who knows what he'll do to her. And therefore, they'll have relations when she's a nida. The shvichas damim is, Rashi gives the example, first of all, we have our case here, Pelegish Begiver, where there was a lot of shvichas damim because of it. Second of all, Rashi gives an example. Imagine she's so afraid of her husband, she runs away and falls into a pit or falls off a bridge or something in her haste to run away. And Chilul Shabbos, because, let's say, for example, comes before Shabbos, she hasn't had time to finish all the Shabbos preparation, she knows her husband is going to be really mad, and therefore she'll light the candles or finish preparing the food or whatever, even though it's already Shabbos, she'd rather do that than face her husband and then face her husband's anger. So therefore it causes Chilul Shabbos. Tosfos gives another explanation, that actually Tosfos quotes the Seder Olam, that the day that the story of Pelegish Begiva happened was Shabbos. Therefore, you have Gili Arayas, that they all raped Pelegish, Shvichas Damim, they killed her, and Chil Hashem, actually. So not Chil Shabbos, but apparently Tosfos has the Girsa Chil Hashem. And then Ben Yehoyada gives a different explanation, how you get to the first two, how do you get to Gili Arayas, and how you get to Shvichas Damim. Gilei Arayis, he says, two possibilities. First of all, he says, what happens, for example, something expensive breaks in the house? Normally, if the husband is not Makal Eima Yaseira, she'll be able to tell her husband it broke, and okay, you know, we'll live with it, we'll raise money to get a new one, whatever. If she's extremely afraid of him, who knows what he'll do to her, she may feel the necessity to go be Mizana or something, and to raise money to buy it, rather than rent. Or the other possibility, he says, imagine you have, and he mentions that such cases described in Shaul Satrovus literature, imagine you have somebody who threatens her as follows. You sleep with me, and if you don't, I'm going to falsely claim to your husband that you did. So again, if her husband is a reasonable person, she'll be able to go and tell, when this guy comes and tells you that I slept with him, that I was Mizana with him, don't believe him. But if her husband is an unreasonable guy, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, she may figure, you know what, he's not going to accept any explanation from me, then in that case, I may as well go along with it because I'm stuck in a corner over here. As far as Shvichas Damim, he mentions a case, I don't know if it's a real live case or just a scenario that he's saying, that there was a bottle of milk on the table where a snake crept out of a hole and drank some of the milk, which we learn in many places in the Gemara makes it unsafe to drink. She was too afraid to tell her husband because he might beat her or whatever, and therefore he ended up drinking and dying of the poison.
Happy.
I don't know if she was happy, but whatever. That's how we see that Shvichas Damim can come of a person being too overbearing on the members of his household. Right now we're talking about the responsibility of the husband. Right. I mean, obviously a wife has a responsibility the Rambam puts it very well in Hilchos Ishus, that a wife has to respect her husband like a king or like a prince, and a husband has to love his wife like himself and honor her more than himself. And that'll make for a happy, stable marriage. But here we're focused.
Question, that his wife can be, you know, she can make him fear her.
Yeah. Why not the problem? Why not the problem also? That's also a problem. We're not dealing with that over here. We're dealing with the angle that the husband is responsible to make sure
right,
not to.
Is it dealt in the Gemara somewhere else?
Yeah, we learned in Zota, for example, we learned about the woman's responsibilities of keeping the household running smoothly and not then, you know. We learned over there about anger and about znus. So yeah. We had it over there. And there's other places also. What, Pelegish Begiva?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Maharal has a long symbolic explanation that Pelegish Begiva basically represents a lack of Seder in the world, and the Eivishtev is running the Seder in the world, and therefore like he's learning Pelegish Begiva means like dealing with the fact, like how comes it that there's no apparent Seder in the world, and Seder has to be reestablished as it was in those days. Symbolically, we talk about that as learning about Pelegish Begiva.
Where's Kiva?
Kiva is a city in Binyamin. Nowadays, it's, I think, in the suburbs of Yerushalayim or something. Later on, a couple hundred years later, it became Shoal's capital, Givat Shoal. It's not the same as the neighborhood of Givat Shoal nowadays in Yerushalayim.
So were they right fighting Binyamin over the Pelegish?
Well, they were right and they weren't right. I mean, on the one hand, there's actually a Gemara or a Medrash that says, that the Eivishta says, you know what, look at this. For the last couple hundred years, the last period of time, there's been Micha's statue up there, first in Micha's house, and then by Shiva Don, and nobody had anything to say about it. Now, all of a sudden, because of the Bein Adam Machaveira thing, all of a sudden, everybody's up in arms. And that's why the other Shvatim ended up losing the first two battles. To show them that, you know what, if you do have to be careful about covered boss of a dumb, sure, but you have to be no less concerned about covered Shemayim.